Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible. Thank you. Much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday to you. So if you're answered this question, have you ever told God, I'll do anything but this, or I'll go anywhere but this place? What was that place that you told him you would rather not go? And did he end up leading you there? I'd love to know that, actually. Is there a place that you said, Lord, I'll go anywhere but this place, and he called you there anyway? Well, I've got a guest for you today, and he has got a story for you. My guest's name is Jim Gash. Title of his book, Divine Collision, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. This is from his book, Call the Travel Agent. Uganda 2010 is a go, I heard myself say. I was out of excuses. There was no turning back now. We'd be gone for 17 days, and then my life would go back to normal. Well, we'll hear from a man who followed God's nudge to travel overseas to help free a young man who was sitting in prison for a crime that he did not commit. It's going to be a powerful hour. I hope you can stay tuned for the full show today. If you miss any of it, the podcast will be up shortly thereafter on our website at myfaithradio.com. Couple quick announcements before we get Jim on the show. If you've got a dream to be published, I'm telling you, this is your chance to take those first steps toward that amazing goal. I'm telling you, it's worth it. I had to face down my fears to do the same thing. Very, very worth it. We are hosting our fourth annual Faith Radio Writers Contest. The theme this year is redemption. You can write on the fiction and the nonfiction track. All the info, the submission guidelines are on our website, and we will be taking submissions till the 22nd of this month. And I'm telling you what, the top vote getters will get to come to the station, eat in the green room, have a great luncheon with our Faith Radio staff, as well as some editors from Bethany House Publishers, and then you'll get a 15-minute face-to-face one-on-one appointment with an editor and pitch your idea, and it's an amazing opportunity. So hope you'll take advantage of that if you have even the slightest inkling of wanting to get published. Also, we are partnering with the National Association of Evangelicals in hopes to see 1 million people praying on Sunday, July 10th. Appealing to God Most High, the God of angel armies for this nation. Would you do that? Would you consider signing up your life group or your church? You can find more information on the website, on National Association of Evangelicals website, NAE.net. Okay, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Jim Gash is a professor of law at Pepperdine University School of Law, teaching torts, evidence, and legal ethics. He also serves as a director of Global Justice Program in Pepperdine's Newt Barr Institute for Law, Religion, and Ethics. In 2013, he became the first American ever to appear as an attorney in Ugandan court. He's married with three children and lives in Malibu, California. You can find more about him. Listen to this website address, throwingstarfish.com. Dear Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Susie. Great to be here.
So good to meet you. And Jim, we love to start our conversations every day talking scripture. And I'm wondering if you either have a life verse or just a verse you've been thinking about these days that you can share with us.
Well, I would say over the course of my life, I've had numerous verses that have come and gone. And Galatians 2:20 was my college verse, but I look back at it now and think I wasn't even remotely living up to that. And then for a while, it became Matthew 25, visiting people in prison. And that's where I was challenged to go. But recently, it's been more about trying to surrender control to God. And so Matthew 6:34, about not worrying about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. So that's my biggest challenge right now, is continuing to surrender to God control of my life.
You know, Jim, I can imagine that's dually hard as a lawyer, because in some ways, well, a lot of ways, you've got to plan for the future, but you've got to carry today's burden with today's grace, don't you?
Exactly. And that's been a challenge since I was young, and I wish I could say I've conquered it, but I'm in the process. We're all in the process.
Indeed.
Of conquering that.
Were you a lawyer before you were a lawyer? I mean, like when you were 12? I'm just wondering.
No, but lawyers are famous for arguing, and I would say that that's probably something that I got to be too good at for my own good.
Okie dokie. So that was a kind of a spiritual gift. Well, I would love to get some backstory just on your faith journey and then how you knew and when you knew you wanted to practice law.
Yeah, I grew up in a Christian home with awesome parents, great siblings, a great church, and no interest at all in practicing law. My parents were both school teachers, and I thought that's what I wanted to do. And then during my last year of college, I took a class at Abilene Christian called Business Law and met the dean of Pepperdine's Law School, and he kind of painted for me a picture of a place where you could be equipped to serve those in greatest need in society, do so in Malibu at a Christian institution. And so I became sold on that dream to go to law school. And then shortly thereafter, after the first year, decided I want to come back and teach at that law school. And so those are my dreams, really starting from my senior year in college.
And when you would hear different speakers talk about going over there, going, you know, somewhere else, you thought, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And talk about how that idea and that proposition sort of went from your head to your heart.
Yeah, well, what happened was I was very, very good at sending others and supporting others in doing this. In my role as Dean of Students in 2009, we had Baroness Carolyn Cox of the British House of Lords come to campus, and she talked about using your gifts to serve those in need and encouraging us to do that. And my Bible at the time said, "There are they, Lord, send them." And so I was all about sending people. And, you know, I was facilitating as Dean of Students, sending students around the globe to do work for the oppressed. And then a month later is when I first met this guy, Bob Goss, that your readers or your listeners will probably know a little bit about. And he gave a speech at a Christian Legal Society conference where he talked about love, and he said, love isn't just about supporting, isn't just about encouraging, isn't just about praying. If you love, then you will do. And that's the moment at which my Bible changed back to the original translation of, "Here, my Lord, send me." And so 2 or 3 months later, I was on a plane heading to Africa, having zero desire to do that before, or really even at the time. It was more of a kind of a, okay, Lord, if this is what you're having me do, but you're doing this against my will. Is how I felt time.
Wow. You're messing with me right now because there's just an invitation that came behind the scenes for me that's messing me up so bad. And you're saying all the wrong things to me right now. But anyway.
Well, perhaps it's somebody speaking through me to you.
Exactly.
I won't pretend to be speaking for God, but he has done some other things that have spoken to me through other people. So who knows? I encourage
appreciate
you to listen.
That. Thank you very much for that. So at what point when you arrived in Uganda, did you get a sense that God's purpose was for you was even deeper than you thought?
Well, not initially. When I first landed, it's a developing country in East Africa with quite a few needs that it has. And what hamster wheeled through my mind for most of the first couple of days I was there is, what am I doing here? And then as I got to meet some of the kids in prison, we visited a children's prison and tried to assist them in getting access to justice. I met this boy named Henry, and during our conversation, he asked me for my phone number. I'd given him a business card with my phone number on there. And when I responded, I was thinking, do I give him my phone number? Do I just say, no, here's my work number? You know, I gave him my cell phone number, but it took a lot much longer than it should have for me to decide, this isn't just a volunteerism thing. This isn't my one and done. I went really as an opportunity to show my wife and to show my kids and to show my God that I was willing to surrender a little bit of control, take a step out of my comfort zone. But when I looked into his eyes and I saw his plight, I realized at that point, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to say yes. And so I did. And it's been a roller coaster in so many ways.
Mm. So Henry, wow, his story. He and his brother unjustly accused in prison. Somebody killed a man who robbed from his family, but they didn't do it. They were in school. There were actually witnesses to see them in school, but they were hauled away and put in prison. Give us more context of Henry's story. I mean, like I told you before the show, I realized I'd been holding my breath about 40 minutes while I was reading your story in this book. But talk about Henry.
Yeah, Henry was 15-year-old kid who was at the very top of his local school, who was very inquisitive, who was very sharp, whose family was poor. They had some cows. His mother made bread for a living and sold it to local merchants, and his father sold envelopes that he made. And so they were just this rural peasant farmer family until everything changed with the death of their herdsman. And so Henry was in school. His family was arrested because the village mob had found him. He was a thief, and so they found him, beat him to death, and delivered him at the porch of their house. And then Henry and his brother were taken to a juvenile prison for nearly 2 years before I met them, with no trial date set, with no lawyer, with no hope. And so he was just this despondent young man, but he was clinging to his faith. He believed deeply that God would hear his prayers and would be faithful in the end. But it was slipping to some degree before we met.
What's so amazing about his story is, you know, there were leaders in the prison, but he was a true leader, and he kind of rose to that position of prominence. And once the leader that left, I think he was released, and Henry was appointed, you know, he'd been depressed, and his brother Joseph said, "You're a leader. We're all looking to you. If you don't have hope, none of us will have hope." And he determined to start a school in that prison. He determined soccer games in the afternoon, that there would be somebody that would lead worship. I mean, I'm trying to imagine in this unbelievable circumstance, in this horrible facility, that this young man would have the kind of grit to do something like that. I mean, he's an extraordinary young man, isn't he?
He is, and he was... for all the reasons you mentioned and for the time I spent with him, he was a huge part of God convicting me in my faith, because the question, if asked to me, what are you doing right now that requires faith? My answer would be, well, I go to church. I pray every night. I try to teach my kids about the Bible. But I wasn't doing anything that actually required me to say, okay, God, if you're there, I'm going to step out, and I know you're going to be there for me. And that's what he was doing. And so I look at him and think, wow, I didn't realize how shallow my faith really was until I saw the depth of it in a teenage boy.
Did you know right away that you might be able to help him, or did you have high hopes that were dashed because it took long? Or what were your initial thoughts when you started to interview Henry and get more background on his story?
Yeah, when we first walked into this prison, there was four lawyers. We walked into this prison, and I remember thinking as I walked in, this isn't okay with me. There were 21 kids, no electricity, no running water, no flush toilets, no hope. And thinking, somebody has got to do something about this. But I knew at that point it wasn't going to be me, because this was my one and done. Over the course of the week of preparing these cases for Ugandans to take to resolution, we started to realize we actually are making a difference. We actually can move these cases forward. We can help improve the lot of these kids. At that point, we hadn't even thought about trying to help the judicial system structurally. We were just trying to help these individual kids. And so by the end of that first week when we were there, I did feel like we were going to be able to make a difference. I didn't realize, foolishly, just how long it would take for things to move through the system there.
Pausing right now. We've got two copies of this hardcover amazing story that you really won't be able to put down. It's called Divine Collision, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and The Remarkable Battle for Freedom. If you've got a question for Jim about just this process, about even the process of stepping out of your comfort zone, I'll open the phone lines just a couple of times. I want to give Jim as much time as possible. But if you get on the air with a question, you'll get a copy of this amazing book, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with a lawyer and amazing humanitarian Jim Gash when we can return. My guest asked during the opening of the show, you know, what are we doing that's requiring faith, where we really are stepping out to the point that, God, if you don't come through for me, I'm kind of sunk here. We live by faith. We can't please God without faith. And truly, that faith is something to be stretched. And there's no auto-cruise. There's no autopilot cruise control for the Christian faith. There are times of rest. There's times of running, but never checking it out, checking out and just sort of going through the motions. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to lawyer and godly man Jim Gash, who felt called to go to Uganda. And he worked with a boy named Henry who was unjustly imprisoned, and they battled together for Henry's freedom. And this is an exceptional young man, this Henry. And the title of Jim's book is Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. If you don't mind, Jim, then, so you met Henry, and now you take the first steps to try to get justice for him. Can you just tell us a bit more about that story?
Yeah, so what we did is, as we prepared these summary briefs for each of the 21 kids, we gave them to Ugandan lawyers to move the case from the point at which it had left off, which was essentially ground zero, and move it forward. And so over the course of the next about 8 weeks, each of these cases moved through the system, and 17 of the 21 were released. And so Henry and I at that point were talking every few days on the phone, because I had actually given him my phone number. And so we were talking on the phone, and then when the case finally went to trial against Henry, things went quite south in how they should have gone, and Henry was actually convicted of murder. It wasn't the murder he was originally charged with his brother. There was a separate death that occurred at the prison when a juvenile was trying to escape, and since Henry was in charge, he and the adult matron were both charged with murder. And so when they were both convicted, I got on the next plane and flew back to Uganda about 3 months after we had originally met. And so this was now in May of 10. So I flew back and prepared what's called a pre-sentence report to try and get his sentence limited to probation, which is what ultimately happened. He was convicted of murder, but released on probation to go to school at a school run by Bob Goff in northern Uganda. So at that point, he'd been convicted. He was out on probation, but we were not at all comfortable with a murder conviction on his record. And so that's how I ultimately became his lawyer in the Court of Appeals.
And this story is just so heart-wrenching, because this woman, this Rose, who was kind of the head of this prison, she was not supposed to be working these kids. And so she was privately taking them to farms, working them to death, not feeding them. If anybody fell behind, she'd beat them. And so it's like, and yet the social worker that would come, everybody was afraid to tell him. He was a kind man, but they were afraid because she would beat them once he left. And this is the one time Henry stands up to her, because this boy is falling behind because of asthma. And she's threatening, if you don't beat him, I'll beat you. And so Henry stands up to her. So to be unjustly accused, she's the one who drove him into the ground to the point where he died of an asthma attack. And yet Henry bears, I mean, the injustice of it is mind-boggling.
Which is why I just couldn't sit here and wonder, I wonder how God is going to get him out of this. I just felt like, this is the answer to the question that Henry had been asking me for about 8 weeks now, is when are you coming back to Uganda? And it was always, oh, maybe someday, that'd be great, I'd love to come back. And at that point I knew, well, the answer's now. And I flew back there. And while I was there, something other than his case triggered a very important change in my life. And that's the head of the criminal court asked to meet with me and said, we want to study how to move cases more efficiently through the system. We want to figure out what sort of structural changes we might be able to do. Can you help?
Wow.
And so that's when I invited a group of Ugandans to the United States for the first time in the middle of 2010. And that's how the whole structural change got started, was that second trip after he was convicted. Do you think, how is God working? Well, in mysterious ways, but in ways you can look back and see his clear guidance of his hand in the process.
Well, you could have totally been suspect to them. You could have been a threat. They could have been intimidated, jealous, territorial. So for him to invite you in to say, help us with this system, I mean, my goodness, that's favor, isn't it?
It is. And people have asked, you know, how do you get things done in East Africa, in the developing world? And my response is always the same way you get things done in the rest of the world. It's about relationships. It's about building trust and respect. And before trust and respect are received, they must be given. And so that was part of the process of coming into them with open hands, saying, what can we do to help? Not, here's what you should do, here's what you need to change, it's how can we be helpful to you? And they were eager to engage on those terms.
Wow. Okay, so how long were you there when you flew back that 3 months later to address that and then speak with this?
I was there about 6 days in the country.
Okay. And then, so how long did Henry end up staying in prison then from start to finish?
22 months. He was in there 22 months.
And we've got probably about 3 minutes before our bottom of the hour break. Take us to that point where it looked like his release was coming close. And what was the catalyst that initiated his freedom then?
Yeah, well, when I was in Uganda during that second visit, he was taken to have an examination done of him because he's been convicted as a juvenile. But if he was 17 years old, and in Uganda they don't have birth certificates, and so they were doing a physical examination of his teeth to determine whether he was actually 18. And if he was 18, he was eligible for the death penalty.
Oh,
and so there was some really, really scary times while I was there when ultimately the doctor came back and said, no, I'm confirming what the prior doctor said, he's 18. At that point, or 17, at that point we knew the maximum sentence was 3 years. And so I came back home, and about 4 or 5 weeks later, ultimately he was brought before a magistrate judge and given the sentence based upon the pre-sentence report we had worked on together and given 1 year of probation. And so in May of 2010, he was finally released after being arrested in June of 2008. And so that was one of the most joyful days of my life when he was able to return home and resume school. And at that point, I didn't really know whether my relationship with Uganda was going to be as deep as it ended up being. I had no idea at that point that my family and I would ultimately move there for 6 years to try and help them change the structure. But that was the day when he was released. It was, I'm a crier anyway. I got pretty dehydrated that day when I was done rejoicing with him and for him.
So talk about Joseph. We just got about a minute and a half here. What happened with Joseph, his brother?
Yeah, Joseph was released as well, and Joseph went to the same school, Restore Leadership Academy, in Gulu, Uganda, and just finished his high school, his senior six, and Joseph starts in August in law school.
Oh my.
At Kampala International University. So he was admitted about 2 weeks ago, and he begins studying to be a lawyer in just a few months. And so that's a really exciting thing. And Henry is in school as well. Maybe we can chat further about that as well after the break. He's in a different kind of school. He's 2 years ahead of Joseph. And so we can go into that also.
And Henry and Joseph's father was also unjustly imprisoned, and their mom, Henry and Joseph's mom, is the one who kept saying, keep the faith. What an amazing woman. Keep telling her sons, you keep the faith. God will not forsake us. And it would have been so easy to think that he did, but he didn't. And there's more to this story. More with Jim Cash when we return. I want to give him as much time as possible. So this is what we're going to do. We've got two copies of this book. In fact, I'll give you my copy too, if we hear from you. Okay, Susie@myfaithradio.com. I'm going to get one for my son because I think he'll eat this book right up. But email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Divine Collision in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. Your name will go on a drawing, and two or three of you will get a copy of Jim's book. More with Jim Cash when we return. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. And you know what? We've been talking about living by faith, responding to the nudge of the Holy Spirit, even when the Lord calls you out of your comfort zone. Because you've heard this, where He guides, He provides, and He will sustain and equip you, even if you feel up in over your head. We please him by our faith. We listen for what he says, and then we do what he says we should do. Talking to a man today, a lawyer, who followed God's nudge to travel overseas to help free a young man who was sitting in a prison in Uganda for a crime he did not commit. Jim Gash is my guest today. Title of his book, Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. So Henry is released. His brother Joseph is released. Tell us more about how Henry's doing, but then also how it played out with his father, who was also in a different prison. All of these guys unjustly imprisoned for a crime somebody else committed.
Right. And well, Joseph and his father and Henry's father were both released a couple months before Henry was, because the initial case against them when it came to trial was dismissed because there wasn't any evidence. There never was any evidence. And so they were back at home. Henry's father resumed work, and Henry and his father made up. Henry's father and mother made up for lost time and had another child. Kind of one of those unexpected blessings of his release. And so Henry continued to school. Joseph went to school, and then the case continued to proceed. But the Ugandan judiciary started to become more interested in making some changes. So when they were out here on that first visit, the six judges, they asked me to take them somewhere to pray before they left. And they said, "Will you pray that we will have the boldness we need to take the necessary steps to ensure there's no more Henrys in our judicial system?" And I said, "Happily, let's go pray somewhere." Just before we prayed, one of the judges said, "And will you also pray," or he said, "will you also consider whether you will move to Uganda to help us implement these changes?" And at that point, I said to him what I say to anybody who asks me to do something I don't want to do. And then, "Oh, I'll pray about it." And I did pray about it. And then my wife and kids prayed about it. And ultimately, we decided we felt God was calling us to relocate to Uganda. And so the five of us went for 6 months in January of 2012 and helped them restructure their juvenile justice system to ensure there are no more Henrys. And then when that was over, we moved back, and then I continued to work with them on restructuring their adult justice system. And so that's what we're in the midst of right now, is helping them implement these changes all across the adult prisons. I've been back now 18 times to Uganda since I first went in 2010.
Wow. And for those who just tuned in and missed previous conversations, so the initial crime that they were accused of that was thrown out because there was no evidence. But while Henry's in prison, and here he's this leader, he's this man of God, and there was a boy with asthma who kept lagging behind, and this woman who ran the prison, these kids, she'd run them into the ground. In fact, she used fear. If they fell behind, she would have these other boys bury him alive with just his head sticking out of the sand, and threatening him, saying, "There's worse coming for you if you lag behind." Well, this particular kid had asthma, and she kept threatening him, and she told Henry to beat him, and Henry wouldn't do it because it was for him to stand up to her was very big, and it sounded like nobody had ever done that before. So for him to be framed for this boy's death is so unjust. Did any of that ever come out, or did he just have to do partial time and then be released? How did that come to fruition?
Yeah, so he had to do time, and then when the trial happened, Henry wasn't allowed to testify by his lawyer. There's one lawyer that represented Rose, the matron, and Henry. He called Rose to the stand. She testified against Henry. Henry wasn't allowed to testify. None of the kids were called to the stand, and so they were both convicted of murder, which was the subject of the appeal that I, in March of 2013, had the opportunity to argue on behalf of Henry. And then in June of 2015, we finally got the ruling completely exonerating Henry from all charges from any wrongdoing. And so that was the day that he became sure that his life's goal was going to happen, because a few months earlier, before the ruling, he had begun medical school, and Henry is now in his second year of medical school studying to be a doctor. And now that he has this conviction overturned, he is eligible to practice medicine when he graduates in 4 years. And so it was a huge day of relief when not only was he released in 2010, but when he was fully exonerated in 2015.
Wow. Thank you, Lord. And I'm thinking of his mom living in abject poverty, who truly lost her husband, lost two of her sons. And then I'm trying to remember where she went, but when she came back, their chickens were either killed or stolen. So she is just completely vulnerable to the elements, to injustice, as a mom who's grieving like crazy and continually telling her boys when she'd get to go visit them, "God is strong. God is with you." I mean, look at how faith matters, because God saw her faith. And this girl, this woman has a lawyer and a doctor, basically. We'll have a lawyer and a doctor for sons.
Well,
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. She had been arrested initially as well. She was detained for 2 weeks, and that's when the chickens died and some of them were stolen. And she used to tell Henry and Joseph when she would visit them, when she could afford to, in the prison, which was a couple hours away from her house. She said, "Henry and Joseph, always remember that nothing lasts forever except the word of God."
Mm.
She
reminded
them every time she visited them, just hold on. You know, you have no idea what God's going to. She said, "God sometimes uses bad things for good." And so now looking back on it, you can see, wow, God's hand was really in this. But in the moment, it took so much faith to really believe that while your kids are wasting away in prison.
How are you different now, Jim, that you responded to the nudge that you had zero motivation to follow? How are you different now?
Well, what I would say is we don't have enough time for the next couple hours to tell you how different. But what I can say is I have changed who I think I am and who God thinks or who I think God is. And the way I can describe this is for 42 years, I wrote 42 chapters of my life. I was the author of my story, and I think I did a pretty good job. I wrote in a great wife and wonderful kids and a great job in Malibu, California. But I also wrote in God as a supporting actor. He was there when I needed him. He said his lines when I called on him. He carried the themes of the book, but he wasn't the director. He wasn't the writer. And so in 2010, I finally learned to surrender the pen and say, okay, God, you write the next chapter. You write the next scene. You become the director of my life. And I'm still holding tightly much of the time to this pen, but I'm learning to surrender and say, God, I trust you. And that's the hardest thing for me, this control, the surrendering control to God.
Mm. You know, my hubby and I have worked alongside International Justice Mission in years past. We're co-chaired their benefit here in Minneapolis with Troy and Sarah Groves, and we've traveled to Guatemala and got to meet with law enforcement officials. And what they're doing is absolutely amazing. But just in our work with IJM, learning the unbelievable injustice around the world that we cannot fathom, and we can shake our fist all day long at what's wrong with this nation, but we have so much in place that's right that protects us. I mean, I would love for you just to speak a word about that. I mean, even like land grabbing in Africa is huge. If a woman loses her husband's family can push her off that land, leave her homeless and destitute, and take her land back. That's actually a thing that happens so much that they have, you know, arms of IJM that specifically focus on that. So just talk about some of the injustice that we're maybe not even aware of.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And I'm privileged each year at Pepperdine to co-teach a class with Gary Haugen, the president of IJM, on international human rights, and to work very closely with IJM in a variety of projects. And exactly what you mentioned, Henry's father unfortunately died of liver cancer in March of 2014. And exactly what you mentioned about land grabbing happened to her. Mm. Her husband's family came and tried to take their family land because in Uganda, if you don't have the right recording, well, not just Uganda, in the developing world, if you haven't recorded land purchases properly, then you're subject to the might makes right. And so there was an attempt to take the land from her. Unfortunately, with some help from our IJM friends and with some lawyers that I got to know in Uganda, we've been able to hold on to the land there. But the poor in the developing world have no ability to protect themselves against physical violence. And so if you don't have a functioning rule of law in the country where the police are not corrupt, where the judicial system is working in a timely manner, then the poor are at the mercy of the strong. And oftentimes that leaves the women who are in these countries not as physically strong at the mercy of those who can take land from them. And so IJM is a phenomenal organization, and I'm just blessed to have a close relationship with them. In fact, this morning I was on the phone with the field office director in Guatemala, IJM, about expanding the work we're doing in Uganda into Guatemala. So that's the next process that we're working on.
Well, as soon as I opened your book, I thought, these guys know each other. They have to. So yeah. I love that you do. When you think about, you know, one of the things we learned again from Gary just is that, you know, he said, of course it's good to feed the poor, but if someone doesn't confront the bullies who keep the poor poor, the poor will continue to be poor. I mean, somebody's got to face off with these bullies. And he says they're not brave. They're just mean. And it really does take people like you guys to do what you're doing. One of the things as I learned about some of these injustices over the years is when I'm speaking at conferences, just saying, man, if every believer, just to start with, could first of all help fund ministries where these guys are saying, we'll go. Would you just help us go fund them? But also pray, Lord, put a firewall between the wicked and the weak. You know, I mean, if we interceded on a daily basis, just that, what a difference. How many little girls and boys wouldn't be nabbed, you know, into slavery or trafficking? Amen. And I mean, speak to that just as a man of faith. Give us a charge, if you would, and things that we can do to stand in the gap so we're not just living in our comfortable bubble.
Yeah, well, I would say for me, the biggest barrier to me surrendering the pen, to taking a step of faith and going somewhere in person was fear. And like many of us, I fear failure, I fear embarrassment, I fear not being able to do what I think I'm supposed to do. But I've realized that more than fear of failure, I was fearing success. Because if I take a step of faith and God has nothing there for, you know, God doesn't show up and things, I go to Uganda and nothing happens, then I get to go home to my own life and have the same comfortable life. But if I take a step of faith and God is there, then everything changes. Everything changes. And I didn't want everything to change. I wanted it to be the same. And so I would not have imagined moving to Uganda. I would not have imagined going back and trying to help developing countries fix their judicial systems. So whether it's a step across the world, across the country, or across the street, the biggest fear we face, and I think I'm not alone in this, is the fear of success. If I take a step and go into somebody's deep, dark, uncomfortable world, somebody I don't know, somebody who smells, somebody who's in need, then everything's going to have to change, and I don't want things to change. And God isn't about us making sure we're comfortable. He calls us to step into the brokenness of this world, and when you do, things change. But things change for the better. Things change in the will of the Almighty rather than our own desire for comfort. And that's what I've learned, and I'm still learning quite a bit daily.
Jim, we had Andy Crouch on first hour and talking about his book, Strong and Weak, and talking about how self-preservation and kingdom life, they're not compatible. They're not compatible. Mm-hmm. Strength and weakness are, I mean, because flourishing happens in the presence of both of those things. But our perpetual need and love of self-protection, and I'm the poster child at times because fear is a companion for me, but we have to wrestle this thing to the ground so that we can live the kingdom, be the hands and feet of Christ. When we come back, I want to know how your family has changed, how your kids were impacted by living in Uganda, and your wife. How's your marriage changed, and what's your vision for the future? Talking to Jim Gash, title of his book, Divine Collision. Just as he's probably messing with you as you're listening, his book will mess with you too. Don't you love that? Subtitle, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Divine Collision in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. A couple of you to get a copy of this great book. More when we return. Rescue has come. Think about that. So often it seems like God is an 11th hour God, but faith matters to him. Talking to a lawyer, a brother in the Lord, Jim Gash. He's author of the book Divine Collision, An African Boy, An American Lawyer, and Their Remarkable Battle for Freedom. What I love about Jim's story is that he had no intention of going to Uganda, but the nudge came. He went with really zero motivation, so to speak, to wondering, what am I doing here? But God used that act of obedience to radically change the justice system in Uganda, to change Jim's life. life as he worked to free Henry and Joseph, brothers unjustly accused and imprisoned. Now, Henry and Joseph are in medical school and law school. One's going to be a lawyer, one's going to be a doctor. Their lives have been radically changed. And Jim, at one point, the justice leaders in Uganda asked you to come and live there for 6 months so that you could help them change and revamp their justice system so that this would not happen to Henry's and Joseph's in the future. How fast did your family make that decision? Did you guys have a lot of wrestling? Did you know right away? Talk about that process.
Yeah, I would say a lot of wrestling is a bit of an understatement. Mm-hmm. There was quite a bit of weeping and gnashing of teeth as we prayed through this. But my oldest daughter is the one who said, you know what, let's just pray for 40 days right now. My son was like, let's go. My two girls and my wife were, are you kidding me? And so we prayed for 40 days. And at the end of those 40 days, we decided if the right things fall into place, and there was a lot of things that had to fall into place, then we'll know that this was God directing us. And one by one, those dominoes fell and the doors opened. And so we decided midway through 2011 that we were going to go for 6 months to try to see what we could do and to reconnect as a family and to try and figure out how we could serve together rather than just individually.
Anything happened there that surprised you, and how did it impact your family?
Oh, my goodness. We had quite a bit of surprises. The biggest was my oldest daughter, who was 15 when we moved there. She was deathly afraid of needles in ways that we all know somebody who is just weeping and protesting before even leaving the house. But she always wanted to go into medicine because her younger brother had some health issues that she got to see some ICU nurses take such great care of him. So we thought nothing of this until we arrived. My wife and kids were going to be working in a juvenile prison with me, trying to help, and that fell through. We met this family, American family, that God sent to us to be our companions there. They were involved in medical work. And so on the second day of the medical clinic that they were doing, my oldest daughter learned how to draw blood and test for HIV and malaria.
Yeah.
And that evening when she got home, she said, guess what I did today, Daddy? And you could have given me a million guesses and I would not have said voluntarily encountered needles. But she said, guess what I can do now? I can actually be a nurse. Well, she ultimately decided not to be a nurse. She is going to be a doctor. So yeah. She just finished her junior year at Pepperdine studying pre-med. And so her life changed dramatically. She said, I just took a step toward my darkest fear. I'd said a prayer, took a step toward my darkest fear, and now everything's changed.
That could be on a billboard, Jim, right there, your daughter's statement. And I just think so often that, you know, we spend so much time propping ourselves up from our darkest fears, but if we could just trust, you know, I mean, we trust him with our eternity, but we don't seem to be able to trust him with everything else. And I wonder why that is.
Right.
Yeah. So did you set out to a 6 month commitment? Did you go not knowing how long you'd be there?
No, we actually planned exactly 6 months. It was a compromise. I proposed a year to drop out of life for a year, and so the kids would just resume school a year behind. We were going to do no schooling at all, but my family ultimately convinced me, no, let's just do 6 months homeschool during that time, so they stayed on pace and graduated with their friends. So it was always going to be 6 months, you know, once we decided we were going to go.
Then what was reentry like for you when you came back to the States?
It was tough. It was tougher than we expected. My oldest daughter, once again, shortly after we arrived, she just said, you know, Daddy, I just want to go home. And I'm like, what do you mean? We are home. She said, I know this is where we live, and I know Uganda isn't home, but things have changed. I've changed. Everything's different. So that was a bit of an adjustment. We're wondering, you know, what did we do? Have we really changed our kids in some radical way? And the answer we've found out is yes, and for the best. My kids have so much more confidence and ability to step into situations where they don't have control and taking steps toward people who are in difficult situations. So it's just been a phenomenal positive impact for my family.
So we've got about three and a half minutes before we wrap and pray, Jim, but wondering, what are you working on now, and any fresh vision from God, any sense of where he's taking you?
Well, what we're working on now is working to complete the expansion of the structural change in Uganda to the entire country. And I'm heading back in 4 weeks with about 10 lawyers and 12 law students to do some work there. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, I've been working with other countries, working with Guatemala through IJM, and we're I'm starting to work with Baylor University now. They're going to adopt Zambia like we adopted Uganda, and I'm trying to assist them. Nigeria has also called and is interested in starting this. And so what I'm trying to do is figure out how to continue trusting in God when I see, oh, no, this is getting bigger than I can handle. And then I realize it's always been way bigger than you can handle, Jim. And so just continue to surrender and see where things go. But the book is a dual first person book where you can see through the eyes of Henry what he was thinking the entire time. And as you mentioned about the freedom, the remarkable battle for freedom that the book, the subtitle ends with, that wasn't just his freedom. It's ambiguous on purpose. That was my freedom as well. My freedom from the need to control everything that I do. And so, I'm still in the process of trying to become fully free.
That's amazing. One of the passages you reference, I have to read it, just have you speak to it before we pray here. Matthew 25, verses 35 to 40. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry, feed you, or thirsty, and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Jim, talk to us about just Jesus' charge here, because again, we have today, we don't know about tomorrow, but this is for us, this is for me, this is for you. But when you're there, I mean, as you stepped into that place that God is inviting you to, I always look at his best will as this big raging river of his yes. You know what I'm saying? Where his power is there, his provision, his presence, everything you need is there to do what he's asking you to do. But it's scary to jump in. So speak to that if you would.
Yeah, it continues to be scary. And each time I go, I think, why am I yet again reluctant? Why do I every time I land think, what am I doing here? And it's because I'm still in the process of learning to fully trust. So for me, it's just a matter of taking a step back and saying, okay, I know God. God loves me. God loves these people. Just use the opportunity to be a tool in God's hand. And that's what I'm just trying to do and reminding myself. I need to remind myself more than I do that just be a tool in God's hand. Let him use you. Let him take you to where he thinks that your skills, passions, and talents can be best used to serve people, and just rest in that. And so that's what I would encourage people to do, is figure out where God is pointing you and just rest in the fact that he is the gardener, you are the tool, and just let him use you.
Oh, Jim, this is fantastic. I appreciate you being so brave and courageous to keep, you know, continue to do the next thing God gives you to do. I wonder if you'd pray for our listeners today, that I just think there's many, many of us who are being invited to step out of and face our dark fears like your daughter did, and that we would have the courage to do that.
I will happily do that. Father in heaven, I thank you for this opportunity to share with the people who are listening the way God has showed me how to trust in him. And God, I ask you to collide with those listening to them in ways that are unmistakable, that they see your hand in their lives, that they will resist any sort of fear they have of failure, but more importantly, that they will resist the fear of success. They will resist the fear that you're going to change them and use them to assist others. And God, I ask you to encourage all of us in everything we do to surrender the pen to you, that you may write the next chapter of our lives, and that we'll just hold on and know that you're in control. In your son's name I pray. Amen.
Jim, appreciate you so much. God bless you and all that God has you doing. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity, Susie.
Yeah, great conversation. Title of Jim's book again, Divine Collision, An African Boy, an American Lawyer, and the Remarkable Battle for Freedom. Email me, Susie, at myfaithradio.com. Put Divine Collision in the subject line. Give me your mailing address, and your name will go in a drawing. Two of you will win a copy of this great book. He is for us. And if God is for us, who can stand against us? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Suzy Larson. This is Live the Promise. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. And if you've got a hankering to write, sign up for our writer's contest, okay? Remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.